person in this pub checked. Identified. Backgrounds. Do it now.
Unless they left now, the guards would soon discover the rest of the girls.
Run!
The message was there in bright red, hovering before Lyra's eyes. Lyra hated herself for what she was about to do, hated the command Andy had given. But she allowed Gilly to lead her into the shadows. She stood patiently as Breck silently disabled the single unsuspecting guard by the hole they'd strategically blown in the back wall, a quick exit point. Gilly slipped into the darkness. Breck squeezed in after her, but Lyra stopped and looked over her shoulder one last time, her gut begging her not to go. Never in all of their missions had they abandoned their captain. Even now, the warden of Lunamere was standing over Andy like a predator ready to spring.
"You will rot in hell for this," she said.
"Not happening," Lyra's mind screamed. "This is not happening." It went against every fiber of her being. But it was in order, all part of the plan, and Lyra could not disobey. It was with great pain that she left her captain behind, a prisoner, and went to secure sweet freedom back on the waiting ship.
Chapter 22 Androma. The moons above Arcadius hung like two glowing eyes, their mingling light creating a purple hue in the sky. They stared down onto Avaria, the floating green and purple mountain that housed the Cortaz estate. In daylight, Avaria looked like an oil painting rendered by a master's hand. The rolling green hills, the blue streams flocked on either side by flora in deep reds and yellows and oranges. Then there was the estate itself, all angles and solid lines, like a sprawling white bird with its wings spread across the grounds. At night, however, all of Avaria was bathed in blue. The moonlight winked down onto the estate, peeking into the windows on the fifth floor, illuminating two girls as they tiptoed their way through the halls, careful not to wake the house. "It's just one little ride," Kaylee whispered as Andy followed her best friend and charged past an open doorway that looked like a dark, gaping mouth. "We'll be back before he even knows we're gone." "You're crazy, Cals. It's not going to happen." Over a year had passed since Andy had been sworn in as Kaylee's specter. Until that moment, her life had been so confusing, utterly without direction. Andy was a soldier without a cause, living in the shadows of her mother's perfect Arcadian image, her father's constant urge to train harder, to swing faster, to be a better soldier. Andy loved her planet dearly, but she was too young to be drafted for anything, too angry to make friends. She wouldn't graduate for another 3 years, and no matter how hard she trained to make her father proud, or danced to become the graceful daughter her mother wished her to be, it couldn't fill the void. Andy loved fighting and dancing, but she'd needed something to call her own. Then, through a strange twist of fate, General Cortaz had chosen her out of thousands. Now she was a specter guarding the general's daughter, living in the residential wing of his estate, attending family dinners, her face displayed across the screens of Arcadius as she stayed close by Kaylee's side at balls and high-profile gatherings. She had purpose. She had a position of the highest honor. Her service made her family and her planet proud. The title was hers, earned by her. But more than that, Andy now had a friend as close as a sister. She'd broken through Kaylee's perfect outer image to discover the girl beneath, a girl who had wounds and hang-ups just like Andy. Kaylee worked hard to please her father and her planet. She truly wished to lead Arcadius someday with a military mind and gentle soul, and the general worked her hard. The pressure of it often became too much to bear. Andy was always there to help pick up the pieces. Andy had helped Kaylee through the hard times, and in return, Kaylee had helped Andy break through her own walls, to work through her anger and her feelings of unworthiness. Though Andy guarded Kaylee, she often felt like Kaylee guarded her too. Together, they were a unit. Now, as they tiptoed past a closed doorway, Kaylee put a finger to her lips. a sliver of bright white light peeked out from the crack near the floor. It was his room. Valen Cortaz, Kaylee's strange, silent older brother who always seemed to appear at the most inconvenient times. She could imagine him in there right now, seated at his easel, bringing images to life on canvas, rearranging his tubes of oil paint, or perhaps organizing his clothing by color, much of which was splattered with paint. "Come on," Kaylee whispered. Andy took care with each step, holding back a laugh as they slipped past Valen's room and made it into the main hall of Avaria. A grand, sweeping staircase led down to the rounded entry of the estate, where a hollow of Arcadius's symbol spun in midair far below. Andy leaned on the marble railing beside Kaylee and looked up. One floor above them was the sitting room, tucked away in the far corner, with a picture window overlooking the gardens. It was Kaylee's favorite place to sit and flip through the pages of an ancient paper book. Illustrations covered the pages, a fairy tale of the planets from long ago. One floor past that was the docking bay, where Kaylee's father kept his personal transport ship. "You've never even considered taking it out for a ride?" Kaylee asked. "It's state-of-the-art," Andy said. "The engine alone is worth more than my life, Kaylee. If your father caught us with it, I'd lose my position." Kaylee shook her head, pale ringlets spilling down her back. "It's my birthday. He won't mind." Andy sighed, gripping the railing so tightly her spectre gloves grew taut against her skin. "What if I told you it's never going to happen?" Kaylee smirked. "What if I told you it already has?" Andy whirled to look at her, eyes widening to match the moon's outside. "What did you do?" Kaylee reached into her pocket, then revealed the silver ignition card she'd swiped from her father's office earlier. Andy had thought she'd seen Kaylee slip something from the desk, but Kaylee had learned a few too many tricks from Andy. "One little ride, Androma," she whispered, a smile tugging at the corners of her lips. "Do it for your best friend." "I could lose my job," Andy said again. Kaylee frowned. "My father will never know. He sleeps like the dead. And besides, you're practically part of the family, Andy. A slap on the wrist. Maybe a harsh talking to from the general if he catches us. But other than that," she waved a hand, "you took plenty of flight classes. We both know you'd have become a pilot if you hadn't been given this job." Her blue eyes turned pleadingly large. "Just one little flight around the mountain. Come on, you're the one who's always telling me to lighten up." Andy laughed as Kaylee wiggled the card in her face. A voice that sounded like her father's told her that no soldier, at any time, would disobey orders. But if she was keeping Kaylee safe while she flew the transport, she wouldn't be disobeying at all. "Fine, but if we get caught, I'm saying you kidnapped me and forced me into it." Kaylee nodded, then grabbed Andy's hand and tugged her down the hall toward the stairs. "It's going to be the best night of your life, Androma Rosella," she said as they reached the steps. "It's not like it's going to kill you." Andy woke to darkness, the scent of sweat thick in her nostrils and the too hot feeling of a metal floor just beneath her, a ship's engine rumbling close below it. She cursed, then tried to lift her hands to wipe sweat from her brow. They were stuck, bound in chains that clinked as she tried to squeeze her wrists out of the monocles. For a moment, panic swept through her, twisting itself into her skin, making her itch with the need to run, to get the hell out of here before it was too late. But then another sound mixed in with the rumble of the engine. Snores coming from her left, like the growl of the marauder when Lyra punched it hard and heavy. Andy knew that snore, had found comfort in it from the very first night she'd heard it. Years ago, in the bunkhouse of some brutal bounty hunter on Tenebris. It had always meant she wasn't alone. The snore belonged to Dex, and at the sound of it, despite all her anger at him, Andy relaxed as memories of their last moments in the Dark Matter pub settled into place. The fighting, the sparks, the kiss that left her feeling momentarily like putty as their lips met, like she had so many times before. Until her fury took over. Why was she thinking about that damned kiss? She hated that kiss. She hated Dex's stupid lips. She needed to focus. The plan had worked. They were on a small transport ship, both of them bound in chains, bathed in complete and total darkness. They were prisoners of Zentara, heading to Lunamare, the most horrific prison in all of the Mirabel galaxy. They were exactly where they needed to be. Andy loosed a breath, then leaned her head back against the hot metal wall of the transport ship. The trank still in her system called to her, and, willing or not, she closed her eyes and sank back into the shadowy depths of sleep.
Chapter 23 Valen. Valen was a man made of regrets. Stuck in this endless turmoil, absent of light with only his memories to keep him company, his mind often wandered. At first he tried to remember the positive memories from his past, his mother's warm smile, the adventures he'd shared with his sister, diving off the floating chunks of rock that littered Arcadius into the warm pools of water below with friends. It gave him peace, a tiny glimmer of hope when he couldn't grasp onto anything else. Then the darkness chased the good memories away. Others took their place. The void expression on his mother's face when Valen walked past his parents' bedroom doorway, peering through the cracks as a single word floated out. Unfaithful. The shattered conversations at the dinner table. A glass thrown. Valen's father standing up as his chair fell backward. And not just a single word, but a phrase this time that broke him. You could have stopped her. It was Valen's fault his sister was gone. Valen's fault that he was a weak, pathetic protector who couldn't do his damned job. What were older brothers for, after all, if not to protect their younger siblings? Kaylee would still be alive if not for his cowardice. Singing in the halls, chasing him through hidden water coves and underground tunnels. Sitting beside him in the dance hall as Androma Rosella, Kaylee's best friend from school, performed on stage in front of them. As he drifted to sleep, he was haunted by one reality. His sister was dead, and he was alive. And somewhere out there, her killer ran free. Thoughts like these were the worst of all. Valen sat in his room, staring at a portrait of his sister's protector turned killer. A full moon ago, he'd been hard at work on it when Kaylee had breezed past his closed door, thinking herself silent on bare feet. But Valen had always been one to pick up on the smallest changes in sound, and even more so, the changes in color. He loved the way the paint on his brushes dried when he didn't wash them, deepening from a royal cloudless sky blue to a nighttime starless black. Sometimes he saw the way a star shone purple, then white again, as it winked at him from high in the sky. He loved getting his hands on samples of fabric, observing the changes in shade as he twisted them this way and that in his fingertips. And he always noticed, despite Kaylee's thoughts on the matter, the shifting of shadows slinking beneath his closed door. A dark, formless shape that was there one moment and gone the next. It was how he'd come to be so good at following Kaylee and her specter. How he'd come to notice the grace with which Androma Rosella walked. And her hair. A soft shade of pale blonde to others that was much more to him. In sunlight, it shifted to a white so bright, it reminded him of freshly fallen snow. In darkness, it took on a silver sheen the color of the moon. In the portrait before him, he'd painted her in two halves. One bright white beneath the shining sun, almost blue at the points where it hung in shadow. The other half of her, he'd painted a muted gray, Androma's hair like liquid moonlight spilling across her shoulders, the perfect accent to her stormy eyes. He'd thought it a masterpiece, one of the best he'd ever done. And on that night, he'd been on his way out of his room, pride and a bottle of his father's best gris warming his chest, when he saw them leaving to take the transport for a joyride. Valen closed his eyes and breathed deep. His chest ached, as if it were about to split down the middle. Tonight no shadows slipped by outside his doorway. No footsteps scampered along the cool marble floor, No hushed whispers or muted giggles bounded off the crisp white walls as the two girls rushed by, heading for Kaylee's room. He should have stopped them. He should have grabbed Kaylee's wrist and begged her not to go, fallen to his knees like a child, or simply scooped her up and hauled her away while she screamed obscenities in his ear. The memories pulled him under again.
"Valen."
His mother's voice, soft and broken, behind his closed door.
She'd want you there. You're her brother, Valen."
A deep sigh, followed by the unmistakable sound of her sniffing back tears. He closed his eyes. He wouldn't cry. If he cried, the chasm in his chest would open wide, and he'd fall, and he'd keep falling until he reached the end. His mother had always been strong, but tonight, she was like fractured glass. If he pressed too hard, she'd break. And then who would be there to pick up the pieces? Certainly not his father. General Cortas was busy giving press conferences and formal statements, and beneath his facade of cool diplomatic calm was a belly full of liquor, down from the cabinet in the back of his closet. The chasm in Valen's chest began to open, the heat in his eyes threatening to turn into flames. He blinked once, twice. He could hear the moment his mother gave up and left, and the room seemed to take on a sudden chill in her absence. So Valen sat and stared down at the portrait again, forcing himself to look, to see. He'd done an excellent job. So real in his brushstrokes that it almost seemed as if Androma Rosella was staring up at him now. He didn't want to do it. Gods, he didn't want to at all. But tonight, Valen lifted his brush and uncapped a fresh set of colors, ripe for creation. His paintbrush, clutched in his hand, nearly snapped in two. But with each stroke, he let the sorrow slip away and something harder and stronger took its place. When he was done, he realized he'd been wrong before. The old painting was child's play. Now he'd finally created a masterpiece. He hung it up to dry and left the room, casting only one glance back over his shoulder. Androma Rosella stared at him from the wall. Half of her, the moonlit side, he'd left untouched. But the other, he'd taken his time with. Her face coated in splatters of crimson, in shades of purple so dark they looked nearly black against her pale, smooth skin. Wet, red paint trickled down her cheeks and slipped from the canvas onto the floor. A soft drip, drip, drip that reminded him not of tears, but of his sister's blood. A masterpiece indeed. As if Andy had ripped off the mask she'd been wearing and revealed to the world her second self, the one she'd been hiding just beneath the surface for so long. With effort, Valen tore his eyes from the painting and closed the door. The hallway was empty, the sprawling estate whisper silent. Everyone had already gone, adorned in shades of muted Arcadian gray, to attend Kaylee's funeral. Androma Rosella would not be in attendance. Instead, she was bound in chains, awaiting a trial she would not win. Thrown behind bars, stuck in some deep, impenetrable darkness that no color could thrive in, and no one, no matter how strong, could survive. Until the injection finally stole her away. Valen took equal amounts of pain and comfort in this as he walked. They could throw Androma into the pits of Tenebris for as long as they liked, even give her the death sentence, but it wouldn't bring Kaylee back. When he passed by his sister's room, he caught the slightest hint of her summertime scent. It lingered like a distant breeze, quickly swept away when reality took its place. The chasm in him broken. Valen Cortas fell to his knees in Kaylee's doorway and wept.
Chapter 24 Androma. Andy woke to pain lurching through her skull. She was lying on her back, staring up into the darkness, or she could have been staring down for all she could tell. There was no end to it, no glimmer of moonlight shimmering on the walls, no smudged outline of her feet sprawled out in front of her as she slowly sat upright. This wasn't like the transport. There it had been black all around, but the too hot heat of a ship's working engine beneath her, a feeling that reminded her just enough of the Marauder, kept her calm. Calm enough to focus on the plan, the prize at the end of the Lunamare tunnel. This was something else entirely. This darkness felt as if it held a thousand watching eyes, a pressing sort of black that seemed to seep into her very soul, settling deep inside the marrow in her bones. She shivered, but she didn't think it was entirely due to the cold. The ground beneath her was rough, made of stones that felt like blocks of ice. Andy ran her hands across it, pleased to discover that her shackles were gone. As she moved to push herself to her knees, however, her head seemed to wobble as if under the stupor of spiced Rigna. Or, Andy thought, as she raised her hands to her temples, feeling a lump where some Zen-Terran guard had punched her with his electric gauntlets, the stupor of whatever trank they knocked me out with. This could have been her life, should have been her life. Locked away behind bars, awaiting the death penalty, the ghost of her best friend the only thing to keep her company. That familiar wave of fear spiked through her, and Andy wanted to reach for her swords, to slash and slice and tear apart that piece of herself as she tore apart the bodies of others. Death after death to cover up Kaylee's, to give herself the kind of fate she deserved. But then a groan sounded out from beside her. "You're not alone," Andy remembered. "What the hell?" Dex rasped. "Andy?" Seconds passed, with the sound of his labored breathing seeming to echo against the cold stone walls. She could hear his hands as they groped against the floor, searching. She didn't even flinch away as his fingertips scraped hers, and he froze. "Please tell me this is Andy, and not some love-hungry Zen-Terran carriage slug named Stubby." Despite herself, Andy laughed. The massive slugs were gruesome, oily beasts that tried to bed anything with a heartbeat. "It's me," Andy said. Then she pulled her hand away, immediately colder with the absence of his touch. "How long have we been out for?" Dex asked. "Hell if I know," Andy said. Time seemed to have slipped away from them. Soyina had said they only had 1 hour. Hardly enough time to make their way out of their cell and find Valin, especially with shadows as thick as the obsidianite walls surrounding them. Andy reached down, feeling the virilium cuffs around her wrists with relief. For a moment, she feared they wouldn't be there, that somehow the Lunamare guards had managed to break the impenetrable virilium, impossible as that may be without the right tools, or that Soyina had taken Dex's Krebs and left them in here to rot together. A terrible turn of events that would have been. But there the cuffs were. Cold on her wrists, and with them a surge of solid hope. Andy pressed the small button on the back of each cuff, and light flooded from them, a talisman to keep the shadows at bay. "The best gift you've ever received, Andy," Dex said. "I wonder who gave them to you." She remembered the day he had gifted them to her, and how many Krebs he'd saved up to pay for the cuffs to be designed and installed by a surgeon he had connections with on a tiny rogue moon near the center of Mirabel. The installation had been painful, but once the cuffs were in place, Andy felt nearly whole again. On the outside, at least. They were a gift she'd always be grateful for. Andy sighed. "One of these days, Dextro Arez, I'm going to help you pull your head out of your own ass." Andy turned away, then slowly rose to her feet, ignoring the shouts of pain from her fight-sore muscles. The cell had one gate, with obsidianite bars so thick that Andy instantly knew they'd have been screwed without Soyina's help. The material was almost as strong as virilium. There was no way they would have been able to break out of here otherwise. She pressed her face against the cool bars, staring out into the black abyss beyond. No movement. No shadowed shapes milling about. Far off, she thought she could hear screams or cackles of laughter. But the darkness had a way of playing tricks on one's senses. "My head feels like it's been cracked in two," Dex whined. Andy rolled her eyes. If you're done complaining, she said, remembering how much of a baby Dex could be when he had an ailment of any sort. We need to get moving. We don't know how much time has passed, and if we don't make it to Soyina with Valin in under an hour, we're not leaving this dump alive. Dex rolled to his knees, cursing as he stretched out his muscles. Voluntarily letting myself get beat into submission, he said, is not one of my prouder moments in life. Andy raised a brow as she braided her hair back from her face, then flexed her muscles to test for any weak spots she hadn't noticed earlier. I wasn't aware you had any moments to be proud of. Dex hauled himself upright. You're the worst partner I've ever had, Andromeda Rosella. Andy stuck out her tongue at him, then reached out to test the cell gate. The handle turned, but the gate was heavy. She leaned against it, digging into the bars with her shoulder. The gate creaked and groaned in protest. I'd say I agree with you on that point, Andy whispered, stepping aside to make room for Dex as he joined her. But I think Soyina takes the award on this one. They pushed on the gate together.
Soyina has her charms, Dex said through gritted teeth. You have to admit it.
Andy seriously doubted that, but focused her attention on their escape.
This would be a good time to talk, Dex said.
Andy sighed. We're in the middle of a prison with the clock literally ticking down on our lives, and you want to talk now? Their shoulders pressed up against each other as they worked at the gate.
I can't seem to get you alone, Dex said. So, yes, while we're trapped inside of a prison cell, it seems like the best option.
We don't owe each other a conversation, Andy said. We just have to finish this job and the deal is done.
There are two sides to the story we share, Androma.
Andy grimaced. I don't need to hear your excuses, Dextro. Now push!
If we get out of here alive, promise me you'll just hear me out, Dex whispered. I won't ask again. We can talk about the past and end it for good.
Things ended when you sold me out. 5 minutes, Dex said.
Please, Androma, don't make me beg.
She smiled then. That would be interesting. 5 minutes, she said, if we get this damned gate open and get Valin safely out of here. With a final shove, the gate popped open. It swung outward with a horrible cry, then hung ajar, the light from Andy's cuffs casting crooked shadows across the black wall just beyond, no more than a few arm's lengths away. No guards came running. No prisoners shouted out from cells nearby. The darkness was strange and still, just begging them to step out of their cell and explore. Andy looked left, then right. Nothing but bars, as far as the light from her cuffs allowed her to see. For a moment, she and Dex simply stood there, staring out at the narrow hall, their boots frozen on the threshold of their cell.
"Looks like I'm halfway to earning my 5 minutes." "What's the matter, Baroness?" Dex finally whispered.
Andy could feel the warmth of his breath on her cheek.
"Scared?"
She feared a lot of things. Loneliness, losing the lives of her crew or damaging her ship beyond repair. But not darkness. That was a part of her. The very thing that had allowed her to survive for this long. Only 1 hour, or less, depending on how long they'd been out for, and the silence would be shattered by blaring alarms, the frenzied tap of guard boots on stone floors, the click of bullets sliding into rifle chambers held by guards who would shoot not to disarm but to kill. This is what she had trained her whole life for. The thrill of the moment had arrived. Without a word, Andy took a step forward, shedding the weakest parts of herself as she allowed the bloody Baroness to take over. Dex followed, and together they left their empty cell behind.
Chapter 25 Dex. Never again, Dex thought. Never again would he allow one of his clients to outsmart him and land him in a situation like the present one. Rescue missions. They were not his idea of fun. After this, Dex would go to one of the warm moons of Adhira. He'd lie by the golden water's edge with a beautiful, soft-skinned woman by his side, preferably one who spoke sweet nothings into his ears, one whose favorite type of makeup was rouged lips instead of blood-splattered cheeks, one who didn't separate limbs from bodies or stomp through piles of corpses in the middle of some dark, dank prison moon in the most miserable system in Mirabel. That woman stood beside Dex now in the darkness, brushing her purple-streaked hair back from her face. Splatters of red had mixed in with the other strands. Dex hadn't even seen the guards appear from the black before Andy cursed and was on them, tackling the first so that his head slammed into the stones with a sickening crack. "Help me finish him," she'd ordered, and by the time Dex stole the electric short whip from the guard and shocked him into unconsciousness, Andy had stolen a key ring off the other's belt loop. Her arm had coiled back like a spring, and then she'd stabbed the guard in the eye with the largest, longest key. "God stars, Andy," Dex said now as he leaned over to inspect the corpse. The key looked strangely at home in his eye socket, perfectly positioned in the center, as if Andy had placed it there with an artist's flair. The river of blood was already slowing to a trickle, pooling in a small puddle on the stone floor beside his gasping mouth. Dex shuddered, then looked back up at her. The light from her cuffs made her look like a ghost, pale and speckled with the proof of more deaths. "If you haven't noticed," Andy said, leaning down and plucking the guard's whip from his belt, "we're short on weapons and time. I don't have a lot of options here, Dextro."
"You shoved a key through his eye," Dex said.
He looked down at the corpse again, then back at Andy. She ignored him, a skill she'd always possessed, and pressed a button on the whip. There was a crackle, and an arc of blue spiraled out, bathing the hall in flickering light. The drying blood on her face looked dark as oil as her eyes met his.
"If I didn't take care of him, he would have sounded the alarm. Then we would have been facing 50 guards instead of 2. Those aren't odds I'm willing to bet on today."
As Dex stared at her, he suddenly understood the bare truth. There was no remorse in her eyes for the kills, not even a flicker. There was nothing but the promise of the mission pulling her forward. Once, Andy felt things to the point that they nearly broke her, and she'd allowed her feelings to control every action. She'd cared deeply for him, and he felt the same feelings resonating inside. For years, he'd wondered if the rumors about her weren't entirely correct, if maybe the Bloody Baroness was just a show, a persona Andy had created to keep herself and her crew safe. He figured that when the metal shields covered up the marauder, she mourned with her crew for the lives lost, the dark things she'd had to do in order to get the job done. Dex had been wrong. The Bloody Baroness didn't feel remorse for these kills, nor had she mourned for the members of Dex's crew she'd taken out when he'd captured her.
"It's not just a reputation, is it?" Dex asked. Andy raised a brow at him. "The Bloody Baroness," he said, stepping past the fallen guards, wondering about who they were, what they would have done with their lives had they not ended up in this pile at his feet. The Bloody Baroness was Andy, through and through, and probably had been since the day she stole his ship. Now she turned to the darkness, standing tall and strong as she stared ahead, not a hint of fear on her beautiful face. She dealt out death like a deck of cards. How many more would die before they got Valancortis out of here alive?
2, Andy said quietly, as she turned off the electric whip and doused them in shadow once more.
2?
Dex echoed.
2 deaths, 2 tallies on my swords.
She looked down at the dead guards, then back up at him. A flicker of pain flashed through her eyes.
I have a code, you know, lines that I don't cross.
And today?
Dex asked, as he looked down at the bodies.
Have you crossed a line?
I remember them, Dex, she said. Every last one.
For a moment, he did see the Andy he'd once known. He saw the same haunted look in her eyes that she'd had as she stood above him, her knife in his chest, her trust shattered because of him. Maybe his original instincts had been correct. Maybe somewhere, hidden deep within, a fragment of her compassion remained.
Cell 306,
Andy said, reminding Dex of their mission.
We still have 12 levels to climb down, and the clock is ticking.
Dex nodded, then followed her into the darkness. It wasn't until they reached the next set of guards, when they slipped into soundless action side by side, that Dex realized something frightening. He loved this, fighting beside her in perfect sync, as a fluid team. For the first time in a long time, he felt fully alive.
Chapter 26. Claren, year 19. The girl, now a queen, sat in her palace, gazing down at her greatest mistake. It was beautiful, this tiny mistake. A creature born from the queen's very body, woven together in her womb, protected from the bitter, dying world outside the palace walls. It wasn't part of her plan. And the queen knew, from the moment she'd first birthed the babe, that she would be forever changed. The infant was wrapped in her arms now, warm and soft and full of the power to change the fate of entire worlds. "Nor," the queen said, stroking the child's tiny cheek with her fingertip. "A strong name, fit for a child of the light." Footsteps sounded outside the room. The queen looked up as the king swept inside, followed by a trail of guards. "You look lovely, my heart," he said, placing a kiss on her lips. A second later, he pressed one to Nora's tiny forehead. Years the king and queen had shared together, and still his eyes held the glassy look of a man helplessly bewitched by love. The queen smiled at him. "You love me," she whispered, "as much as the day you first laid eyes on me."
"I will always love you, Claren."
He said it as if it weren't even a question. She'd hardly had to try to entice him. Perhaps in some way that meant he was her gift. A man who loved her despite what she was. Despite the past she'd kept hidden from him all these years.
"Rest, my girls,"
the king said. And then he was swept away by his entourage, worried looks on their faces as they bowed their heads respectfully, their voices full of strain. A single word ghosting onto their lips. War. Outside, the acid rain bit at the palace walls, stripping them away little by little, eating at the crumbling spires. Below, the ground rumbled with the warning of another quake soon to come. Far beyond, on the city streets, 100,000 lives hungered for salvation. The baby wailed, drawing the queen's attention. "Sleep now, my perfect little mistake," she whispered. "Sleep, and remember to dream of the light." The baby calmed at the sound of her mother's voice. In moments, her eyes closed. Alone in her palace quarters, the queen of Zantara rocked her daughter gently, a tear slipping down her cheek as she remembered her mission and thought of how little time they had left.
Chapter 27 Valen. The darkness was often silent, the slow, steady beating of Valen's heart serving as the only reminder that he was still alive, still suffering the pains of Lunamir. Sometimes he imagined he was back in his former bedroom, listening not to his heart, but to Kaylee.
"You're strange, Valen,"
she'd always told him.
"But you're my favorite kind of strange."
Tonight he'd tried again to remember her. She'd always had kind, curious eyes, and the sound of her laugh was like birds chirping on a spring morning as the sun rose up from beneath the floating grava rocks of Arcadius. And yet, when he tried to bring forth an image of her face, it slipped away. Instead, a sleek, cruel smile took its place. A queen of darkness and shadow. A mistress of misery and salvation. The image of her was swept from his mind, leaving him to rock back and forth in the darkness, trying to remind himself of his mantra, his hold on sanity, his reason to stay alive. "Vengeance will be mine." Revenge. It would taste so, so sweet. As he rocked, he imagined that he heard footsteps in the darkness. But along with the footsteps, he saw a glimpse of softly glowing light. Not the cold, bitter kind that came from his torturer's electric whips or gauntlets, but instead, a light that danced and flickered as it moved and bounced off the walls outside of his cell. Like the stars. Valin gasped and held back a groan as he pulled himself forward on hands and knees. The fresh gashes in his back were still bleeding, his ragged shirt soaked through, parts of the fabric sticking to his shredded skin. He'd nearly died again tonight, beaten down until he'd slipped into that place of calm, warm light. He'd wanted to stay there, to feel the light on his skin. But then he'd heard his sister's voice. "Be strong, Valin," she'd whispered. "Remember, we are stronger together." He held on until the beating ceased, refusing to give up, refusing to break. He crawled forward now in his cell, desperate to get a glimpse of the strange new light. Even if it was a part of his imagination, it had color. It had a softness he hadn't seen since being thrown into this hard place. With effort, he made it to the door, where he knew a guard was always waiting, keys attached to his belt loop, fresh taunts on his lips when he knew Valin was awake and listening. The sound of footsteps slowed. The light in the hall winked out, and Valin was thrust back into darkness again.
"Who's out there? Janaska!"
Valin's guard called out into the black.
"We aren't supposed to switch out for another half hour."
With trembling limbs, Valin reached up and gripped the bars on his cell door, then pulled himself up so he could peer out through them. There was a flash of light, a familiar crackle that made Valin's guts roil as another guard, standing just down the hall, turned their short whip on. The man holding it wasn't one Valin had seen before. Though he couldn't remember the faces from his past, he knew the ones of his tormentors well. Every cold gaze, every wrinkle in their haunting faces. In the crackling light, this new man looked like he had stars trailing down his tan arms. Constellations that almost flickered with light, as if he were a painting, a work of art. "Your shift is over," the star-covered man said, smirking.
"Who the hell are you?"
Valin's guard barked out. Another crackle of light as a second short whip crackled on. Valin gasped, and pain raced through him as his broken ribs screamed in response to the movement. But he couldn't hold back the cry that escaped from his lips. Couldn't believe the sight of the pale-haired woman standing in the darkness, two glowing cuffs on her wrists, illuminating the dark scars on her arms and the blood splatters on her face that looked like paint. She took a step forward, graceful and lithe as a predator, and so real, despite the fact that she couldn't be. "What you should be asking instead," she said with a menacing grin, "is why you're still alive." The guard lifted his wrist where Valin knew a comm was attached, but before he could speak, the woman reacted. She was a blur of color, pale starlight hair, red splatters on her face, soft glowing light around her wrists, and the sharp electric blue whip sparking as she brought it down in a sharp, solid arc. There was a hiss, a small puff of smoke, and the man's hand fell to the stone floor with a thump. The guard was too shocked to even scream. He simply opened his mouth, staring down at his dismembered hand, his smoking stump of a wrist, then back up to look at the woman in the darkness. "You're going to do exactly as I say," she said, but it came out like the purr of a demon, the croon of a devil's pet. "You're going to release the prisoner in cell 306, and if you object, I will cut you into pieces, little by little, until you do." The tattooed man beside her smirked.
"What piece will you start with?"
"I'm not entirely sure." She smiled, but it was all wrong, as if she should have had fangs instead of teeth. Her pale eyes flicked back to the guard, who still stood frozen in front of Valin's cell. "You have 10 seconds to unlock the door. Do it now before I change my mind." The guard turned, fumbling with his remaining hand. He dropped the keys, then cried out as he sank to his knees and tried to grab them. His fingers scraped his dismembered hand, and with a gasp of pain, he slumped to one side, unconscious. Disturbing. The tattooed man said with a chuckle, "Did you really have to cut off his hand?" The young woman didn't answer. She stepped forward, silent and light as a ghost, and scooped the keys up off the stones. Valen stumbled backward, suddenly unwilling to leave this place, unwilling to believe this was reality, that she was really, truly here, bringing light to him in the darkness of Lunamere. The lock clicked open. The door swung forward silently, its hinges well used from his frequent visits to the torture chambers. The tattooed man stayed in the hallway, holding the door. But the young woman stepped into the cell, those strange, glowing blue cuffs illuminating her face. Valen had painted that face many times in years past. He'd thought her beautiful once. An angel with fair hair and even fairer features who'd given his sister joy. A girl he'd been desperate to understand. But when the accident happened, he knew he'd been wrong. Androma Rasella wasn't an angel. She was death incarnate. "Hello, Valen," she said now. She held a steady hand out to him, but he scuttled backward like a bug. "We're here to rescue you." He hadn't used his voice for weeks, and not for anything more than to scream through the pain. He opened his cracked, bleeding lips, was ready to tell her the words he'd imagined saying, after all these years. Then a blaring screech exploded from the walls.
Chapter 28 Androma. The alarm split the silence like a knife. "Damn it all!" Dex shouted, though Andy could barely hear his voice above the alarm. "We're too late!" She turned back to face Valen, her mind racing. One more floor down, and they'd find Soyina waiting for them, along with the promise of escape. They had to go, now. "Valen," Andy said, rushing to his side. "Come on, we're getting you out of here." Valen's eyes slammed shut. He fell to his knees, shaking his head, murmuring, "No, no, no," as he scrambled away, leaving a trail of blood in his wake. How in the hell were they supposed to get him out of here like this? He was a bleeding, shattered mess, hardly able to stand, let alone run down a flight of stairs while being chased by guards. "Help me get him up," Andy shouted to Dex. Valen howled and skittered back even farther, leaving another fresh smear of blood on the stones. He tried to stand, but his legs shook with the effort. His arms were covered in bruises and lashes, and they were far too thin. It was a wonder he was still alive. Andy tried to tamp down the wave of horror she felt seeing him in this state. They didn't have time for this. Somewhere in the distance, shouts rang out, and blue lights danced on the walls outside Valen's open cell door as guards came closer. She peered out the cell door. In the mouth of the stairwell, a guard appeared, then another behind him, followed by two more. She hadn't expected things to go this way, but she knew this was the only part of the mission that counted, the part that would earn her and Dex and her crew their pardoned names and a shipload of crevs. Andy looked down at Valen and frowned. He was a shadow of the person she'd once known, but he was still a Cortas, a living fragment of Kaylee. Andy hadn't been able to keep her friend alive, but she'd be damned if anything happened to Valen under her watch. "I'm sorry about this," she said. Then she brought the solid base of a short whip down over Valen's head. He crumpled in a heap. Dex stared, open-mouthed from behind him. "That's your plan?" "Take an arm," Andy commanded. Soon the two of them stood in the mouth of the cell, Valen's unconscious body hanging between them. "You remember all those sword-fighting lessons you gave me on Tenebris?" Andy asked. "The ones where we fought single-handed?" "Oh, love." Dex lifted a dark brow. "How could I ever forget?" Valen's head lolled against her cheek, and she nearly gagged at his rotten scent. "One more thing, Dex?" Andy asked, shoving Valen's head the other way. Dex met her eyes as she doused the light on her cuffs. "Don't call me love." She gripped her short whip tight, imagining it was one of her swords, already seeing the way she'd slice it through tendons like a blade carving through raw meat. In her mind, she was a specter again. She imagined Kaylee in Valen's place. No one would harm her charge. "Steady," Dex whispered. "Silent." They waited for a breath of a second, allowing the guards to get closer, the light from their weapons brightening with each stomp of their boots. Now, Andy said. Together, she and Dex stepped out of the cell, carrying Valen Cortas between them. Six guards stood just around the corner, weapons raised, looking ready for a fight. They sprang, their two bodies moving in one single motion, Valen still between them. Dex on the left, Andy on the right. They moved so fast, the world around them seemed to pause. Andy's whip flashed in a glorious arc, striking the guard closest to her just as he moved to action. The end of her whip curled around his, snaking like electric fingertips intertwining, and Andy yanked backward. The guard's whip soared past them, then exploded with a shower of sparks against the cell door beyond. "Cover me," Andy growled. Dex attacked as Andy rose, using the counterweight of both boys, and swung her foot into the weaponless guard's jaw. A crack sounded as bones shattered beneath her boot. "Down!" Dex shouted. A short whip soared past the space where Valen's head had just been. It severed the end of Andy's braid, the scent of burned hair wafting into her nostrils. She rose, snarling, as a lock of her hair tumbled to the floor. These Lunamare bastards were going to die. The world moved in flashes as darkness and light fought and intertwined. The guards before them were like ghosts that appeared and then flickered out as the whips and gauntlets cracked from blue to black and back again. With each patch of darkness, Dex and Andy moved forward. Valen's body was like dead weight against their shoulders. "Take them out!" a guard screamed. Passing Valen to Andy, Dex dropped to the floor, leg extended as it rammed into the guard's legs and sent him sprawling. "Come on!" Andy yelled from behind him, moving toward the stairs. Dex looped an arm around Valen, pulling the three of them into the stairwell. He slammed the door behind them, quickly fusing the lock with the electric heat from his short whip. Fists pounded the metal behind them. "One more level and we're out. Sayina will be waiting at the door if we're lucky," Andy said, already pulling the three of them down the eerie staircase. Something whizzed past his face. Andy yelped as a knife sank into her shoulder. In a blink, she yanked it out and held it before her. "Hold Valen," she growled. Before Dex could stop her, she rushed down the stairs, swinging the knife. There were too many guards. Even as Andy fought her way down, more poured up the steps toward him and Valen. He was out of weapons, out of options. "Sorry about this, friend," Dex said. With one grand shove, he pushed Valen down the remaining stairs. The guards toppled in Valen's path. The guy was unconscious, no harm done unless he died on the descent. It was only one flight of stairs, not 20. Dex leaped over the railing to the floor below, scooped up a whip from a fallen guard, and swung his way to Valen's sprawled form. Andy was already there, wrestling a final living guard away. The guard swung with his gauntlets, electricity spitting blue. Andy ducked, then came up swiftly enough to knock his head backward against the wall. A final grunt as she kicked him into silence. Then, nothing. The alarm cut off. Silence swept over them as a door creaked open behind Dex. On the other side was a sight for sore eyes. Sayina, holding a key and standing beside a rolling cart. Her mismatched eyes flashed as she looked at the aftermath of the fight. "Looky, looky," Sayina said. "The gang got out."
"You threw him down the stairs?" Andy asked.
Dex helped her lift Valen into Sayina's waiting cart. "I had to get creative." Beside him, Andy's breath came out in ragged huffs. "We need to go," she said. "Finish the job, Sayina, and get us the hell out of here." Sayina stared at them, a sickening sideways smile on her lips. With a strange cackle, she said, "All right, then. This may hurt a bit." She reached behind her, pulled out a gun, and, with a single shot, sent Dex reeling into darkness. The last thing he saw was Andy's head hitting the ground beside him, her pale eyes wide as moons. Then white light enveloped him, and all semblance of the world melted away.
Chapter 29. Nor. The Queen's lab was a space born of desperation, a pathetic echo of the grandeur that was long ago destroyed in the cataclysm. The remnants were mere scraps of her father's once glorious dream, a place meant to heal the planet of Zenterra, to bring back abundant life before it was too late. That dream had died with her father. Now his old lab had morphed into the birthplace of death. Nor was a queen, bred from the purest of blood, and she couldn't bear stepping foot inside the lab unless absolutely necessary. It had taken Darai ages to convince her to come down here herself. Ages more for Nor to actually do it. Now, as she walked down the crumbling spiral staircase beneath the planet's surface, she could almost feel the walls caving in on her, threatening to crush her once again. She froze as an image of her father ghosted into her mind. She could see his eyes bulging from their sockets, his skull caving in under the foot of a broken stone statue, blood staining the crumbling toes. It was as if Arcardius and the rest of the unified systems had stomped the life right out of her father when they dropped their final bombs. Natilla, Zahn asked, stopping beside Nor to place a warm hand on her elbow. What is it? She'd almost forgotten he was there beside her in the darkness. I'm fine, she said, swallowing the lump in her throat as she shoved the memories away. She breathed deep despite the tightness in her chest, and silently recited the words Darai had raised her on. Fear is only an illusion. Nothing would crush her or stop her until the fates had had their way, and they decided long ago that Nor would be the one to bring about Zenterra's revenge. Should we turn back? Zahn asked, his fingertips spun gentle circles across her skin. Nor looked over her shoulder, where the faint light of day waited, beckoning her to turn back, to give in to her weakness. The claustrophobia was one of her best-kept secrets. Only Darai and Zahn knew the truth about the trauma she'd faced the day of the attack, and the physical and mental scars it had tainted her with. There hadn't been many places within the vicinity of Nivea where they could put the lab, so when Darai found the ancient bomb shelter, still holding strong despite the crippling quakes, they started fortifying its boundaries to last. I am a queen who seeks to be a conqueror, Nor said as the image of her father and the sharp spike of fear still begged entrance to her mind. She closed her eyes and focused on Zahn's hand, soft and warm. There will be battles far worse than this one. And rewards for winning them, he whispered, should my queen wish it. Despite herself, Nor smiled. Silently, she walked past him, deeper into the torch-lit tunnel where Darai waited ahead. The structure was run down, and it didn't improve the farther one went below. Nor's metal heels clacked on the crumbling stones. Dark, putrid water ran beneath her soles as she hurried to keep up with her uncle, Zahn trailing behind her like a moving wall. At the base of the steps, Darai turned right into a narrow hallway. The rafters creaked above them as subtle shock waves shuddered their way through the ground. Nor pulled the hood of her cloak lower, shielding herself from the falling pebbles raining down from above, the edges of the hood like blinders to keep her at ease. One could easily get lost in these tunnels, so deeply carved that none would hear their call. A few more steps, and they turned left at the end of the hall. Straight ahead was a silver door, at such odds with the scenery around them it was almost laughable. They are expecting you, Darai said. I think you will be pleased at what you find inside. He held out a hand, ushering Nor toward the retinal scanner on the door. Faint green light illuminated the space as it beeped her in, and the door swung open with a heavy groan. As she stepped inside, the pungent fumes of preserved bodies and toxins immediately overloaded Nor's senses. She quickly covered her nose and mouth with a scented handkerchief. It smelled like fire callas. They were her mother's favorite flower, grown by gentle hands in the courtyard of the old palace. Now their scent brought a fresh wave of memories that only fueled Nor's urge to seek revenge. Zahn and Darai guided her deeper into the lit space, a cavernous bunker with heavy rock walls and ceilings that made her feel small. Lab techs in red Zenterran coats stood before stone tables, their hands deftly working, tapping away at dimly lit screens, stirring milky vials full of bubbling substances. Long ago, Noor had stood in this very room, watching her father move down the aisles. She'd marveled at the glowing substances, the cherished seeds that her father's scientists had so carefully